And for those who missed the preamble, it was Philippians 3, 7-11. So we're going to consider now Job 28, which really looks at things which man, and I mean mankind, men and women, things which men and women find valuable. And we'll just take it from the very beginning of Job 28. Surely there is a mine for silver, and a place where they refine gold. Iron is taken from the dust, and copper is smelted from the rock. Man puts an end to darkness, and to the farthest limit he searches out the rock in gloom and deep shadow. He sinks a shaft far from habitation, forgotten by the foot. They hang and swing to and fro, far from men. The earth, from it comes food, and underneath it is turned up as fire. Its rocks are the source of sapphire, its dust contains gold. The path no bird of prey knows, nor has the falcon's eye caught sight of it. The proud beasts have not trodden it, nor has the fierce lion passed over it. Man puts his hand on the flint, he overturns the mountains at the base. He hews out channels through the rocks, and his eye sees anything precious. He dams up the streams from flowing, and what is hidden he brings out to the light. There is such industry here. Have you ever thought of such a thing? To take a path deep underground that no eye from a bird can see. To swing to and fro in the gloom because you hunt for gold. That is how precious gold is. Actually, it's interesting. You can buy so-called environmentally friendly wedding rings. And the reason why people are concerned about them is because gold has a measurable price in terms of human lives per kilogram. Because it is so dangerous to mine for it. Likewise, precious stones. And we do these things for gold. For jewels. Spiritually, it also speaks of the development of character in the Christian. And when I read the first verse of chapter 28, surely there is a mine for silver and a place where they refine gold. It came to my heart so strongly that there is a place where the Lord will refine our character. There is a place where gold is refined. There are times when the Lord will bring us to a mine for silver, where character is dug deep out of the ground. And there is a great cost to it. And yet, when you get to the end of verse 11, Job then says, having considered these things, you know, the natural, of such value, that we will give lives for it. And the spiritual so valuable that the Lord will, although it says he does not willingly afflict his people, yet the Lord is concerned to work such character in us. But at the end of all that consideration, Job says, but where can wisdom be found? And where is the place of understanding? I read of a missionary going to China, and the missionary stood in a room of 20 to 40 men and women, some of whom, they have a different sort of idea of culture, and there's a strict sort of respect for elderly and wise. And at the end of the exposition of the gospel, a man stood up and said, how long has your country known about this? My father searched for truth, for wisdom, for 20 years, and died without finding it. How long have you known this truth? And the man, I think it might have been Hudson Taylor, acknowledged that we've known it for some centuries. And the man who acknowledged that it was right and true and gave his life to Christ, the man was astounded that such truth had not been more widely shared. And that is what Job is talking of. Where can wisdom be found? We have things of value, but where can wisdom be found? Where is the place of understanding? And in verse 13, it sums it up. Man does not know its value. Truly, that is the case. I say that of myself, but I say that mankind does not recognize the value of the wisdom of God. Nor is it found in the land of the living. Perhaps it might be helpful to turn to 1 Corinthians 1, just to get an idea of really what this is talking about. And I'll take a couple of verses. We'll start at verse 18. 1 Corinthians 1, 18 and onwards. For the word of the cross is foolishness to those who are perishing. As I said, man does not know wisdom. The word of the cross is foolishness to those who are perishing, but to us who are being saved, it is the power of God. I'll skip for the sake of time and clarity to verse 22. Verse 22 says, for indeed Jews ask for signs and Greeks search for wisdom, but we preach Christ crucified. To Jews a stumbling block and to Gentiles foolishness. But to those who are the called, both Jews and Greeks, Christ, the power of God and the wisdom of God. Wisdom in the book of Job and in the book of Proverbs and elsewhere in the Old Testament speaks of a great deal of things. And it's rightly and aptly translated as wisdom. And I don't want to sort of say that, in a sense, this is all that it speaks of. But if I were to say that the mind, the reasoning, the purpose of God are well summed up in the person and work of Jesus, would you disagree? It says here that, following a sentence on, Christ crucified, Christ the power of God and the wisdom of God. I think it's no wonder then really that Job, back in Job 28, Job says, where can wisdom be found? He's looking for something which is not found on the earth. I'll be in Job 28 for much of the rest of it, so do feel free to turn back there. Job is looking for something which cannot be found. He knows that men search for natural treasure and some for wisdom, and it cannot be found. Man does not know its value, nor is it found in the land of the living. Amen. It's found in the heart of God, in sending Jesus. I'd like to say again, I think, I suppose we're familiar with the chapter in the beginning of John where it describes Jesus as the Word of God. That is the reasoning of God, the Logos, the living Word that encapsulates the purposes and reasoning of God. And I think it is valuable to our souls. It is valuable, you will find it, to your soul to consider Jesus as being the revealed mind of God. He in dying for us on the cross, he shows us that we are not sufficient of ourselves. That is why wisdom is not found in the land of the living. But if you will turn your minds to Jesus, you will find a rest for your souls, because that is what you need. That is wisdom. It is the only solution to your problem of being separated from God, is the work of Jesus. And there's no wisdom contrary to that. I hope it's abundantly clear to you that what I'm suggesting, let me try and make it clear. Job speaks of wisdom. Elsewhere in the Bible it speaks of wisdom, which takes a lot of consideration. It's really worth studying, and there's much to be gained from understanding. I suppose as the Lord reveals his mind to you, it's precious. But if Christ is the wisdom of God, I'd like to suggest to you this morning that it is Christ as the wisdom of God that stands supreme above all other wisdom. All that we might call gain, Jesus is better. His work and person are more precious. And what I'd like to do for the rest of our time is look through Job chapter 28, as Job considers various things which might be considered of value, and there's a bit of an indication of why they might be considered of value, and see if there's anything in our life, I suppose, that reflects that. So, we look down to verse 14. We'll go from Job 28 and verse 14. The deep says, "It is not in me." And the sea says, "It is not with me." But the sea really speaks of something that is just unfathomably vast. And you can travel wherever you want in the world, and you will not find anything better than Jesus. If you haven't known Jesus satisfy your soul, travel will not satisfy it either. Pure gold cannot be given in exchange for it. It's interesting, really. There are a number of words for gold that we find in the passage, and we'll take them as we find them. The first word here simply means that which is safely kept away. That which is guarded under lock and key, if you will. Well, I'll give you two things. And I suppose if you want to know how I've arrived at this list, and is this really true, what I've done is essentially take each of the words in turn and spent time, by the grace of God, digging about in my own heart to find where are my treasures. And so in a way, this is a list of Mike's treasures that he might consider to be of worth. But I wonder if they might be more widely applicable. So you'll forgive me if I use the word you, having already used the word me. Well, I keep my savings under lock and key. I keep money tucked away. And I think, although we can spiritualize these things, let's be honest with ourselves. We value gold in the literal sense of money. But when we get to a conversation with the Almighty, I wonder how we will feel about money when we are talking to the Almighty. When you have your first conversation with God in heaven, when your life, as it were, when you stand at the bar and all your hope is in Jesus, I wonder how you'll feel about any money that you have sort of amassed. I remember reading of C.T. Studd and how he came to a point where he was naturally very wealthy. There's a picture almost comic actually. Side by side, there's a picture in his book, one of which of the home that he would have stood to inherit. And it's enormous. I mean, it's got pillars. And the next picture is of him outside a tent with some clothes strung on the guy ropes. Because that was the end of his life. And he became so embarrassed at his riches that he writes home to his mother and says, "You must sell my clothing. I don't need all my clothes. Get rid of them." I know of another man who read a very large book, actually, that spoke all about the armour of God. And he was so struck by what Jesus could give him that he gave instruction to sell luxury cars, to get rid of it all. Will you be embarrassed at a hoarded amount of riches when you speak to Jesus? And please don't get me wrong, there is nothing wrong with money. But it's sticky. That's not a biblical term, that's just a term I observe from my own heart. I find that I can trust the Lord when I have very little, but as soon as I come into a little bit of it, my heart relaxes and my trust becomes in my money. But pure gold cannot be given in exchange for wisdom, nor can silver be weighed as its price. But before I move on to silver, actually, the gold also speaks of the character that God wants to form in us. Doesn't it? But if we are just to keep ourselves locked away, how will we ever reach the world? I think there is a danger in some Christian circles that we value our Christ-like character so tightly that we will not get our fingers dirty. And I think also there is a danger, can I say this to you, that we so put emphasis on godly character that we forget that it will be as nothing to you when you stand in the judgment court of God. What will you say to the Almighty? "I'm very grateful for Jesus, but I am quite good." I mean, isn't it laughable? "I'm so glad you've made me more honest these days." I mean, you will want to bury any righteousness in the dust. All your hope is in Jesus. Only his righteousness will satisfy the indignation, the anger of God. Please don't let the development of character in any way distract you from the free gift of salvation from God. I really encourage you to consider often to turn your mind whenever you feel downhearted. "Oh Lord, I got that wrong." Perhaps you read a book and you found it to be a little bit close to, I don't know, uncleanness or just a wrong sort of mode of living. And you finished it anyway and then you say sorry to the Lord. I mean, dear brother and sister, if you burned the thing, you'd not be more saved. It is good to let the Lord work character into you. There is a place where they refine gold. But Jesus is of such incomparable virtue, such blessedness. Think on him. Don't think on anything you might think you sort of worked up of righteousness. Or money. Silver, actually. well, I think we've probably spoken enough about money. In verse 16, the word for gold there is the word used for gold which has been mined. This is stuff that's been dug out of the ground. And really, what this means is there are things that we ascribe value to because they're hard to get. Things like promotion. Things like a good name. I mean, that's hard to keep, actually. But what if it's so hard to get, and what if it's so hard to keep that you don't want to lose it, and you find it difficult to bear the reproach of Christ publicly because you're used to a good name? What if your character, which has been so preciously dug out of the ground, ends up as actually you, there used to be a bunch of people called the flagellists, and they would go about and literally whip themselves to make themselves feel more holy. And that is what happens when you allow your eye to be drawn towards what you think is character that's costly, and actually, it's just forgetting that you've been saved by grace in the person of Jesus. Also in verse 16, we have onyx. I'm going off my notes in this, as well as the book, because there are some things which I didn't really manage to get to grips with, and if you'll forgive me, I won't waste time speculating. I'll only seek to bring, I suppose by the grace of God, that which I actually felt had life in my own heart. So if I miss something, don't worry about it, just go and do your own digging. So onyx is an odd thing, and even if there's a bit of ambiguity in the translation of it, what it means is something which has got layers, which is great if you're a jeweller, because it means you can engrave the thing, and you can take that which is already beautiful, and you can add meaning to it. Human meaning. This, at least in part, speaks to my heart of education. Of man's ability, again mankind in the broadest sense, to add understanding and meaning to that which the Lord has made. Do you esteem education? I mean, I work in a place where we do esteem education, and rightly so, these things are precious. But wisdom can be valued in onyx. We'll get later, in verse 18, it speaks of things which are not to be mentioned. It's as if it would be embarrassing to bring such a thing up. Don't worry if you've got education. And don't think a great deal of it if you should find yourself in an occupation which reflects none of your education. And if you haven't got education, well, at least you won't fall into... No, actually, I was going to say, at least you won't fall into the temptation of thinking that education is something to be grasped at. You might feel that you're hard done by, that you should have it. It just isn't anything. It's just onyx. And sapphire. Sapphire is one of the hardest things known to man. It's like diamonds in that respect. It's a similar product of the earth. And sapphire speaks of, amongst other things, the ability to make marks in other things. And in a spiritual context, I would love to be the kind of one that the Lord could use to leave a mark in another person. Oh, what a precious thing to be able to be used so that others are affected. It's so hard when you long for others to come through to the Lord and so little seems to happen. So the thought of being able to leave an impression, I mean, obviously you want it for the Lord, but that's so precious. But supposing you find yourself quite influential, quite able to say things and people take them to heart, what if, by the grace of God, you bring many to Jesus? Please consider, even now, does that weigh, even faintly, with the merits, the sort of the costliness of Jesus? Can you say to the Father, I'm awfully sorry about my sin, but at least a number of people have come to believe in me now? I mean, you wouldn't dare to say it, would you? Wisdom is not to be found. Jesus is not to be found, even in an abundance of such things. In verse 17, The gold there, it's another word for gold, and this one means shimmering. Gold is interesting, isn't it? It's rare, and it's costly, and it's hard to get. And it looks beautiful, and it keeps its beauty. I just noticed that money, you may feel, holds little to you, but what about things? Oh, I do like this thing. I love one of those. I find it so easy to get distracted by love of things. And it's so, I'm literally like a toddler. I don't know what you're like. Or a magpie, you know, that you sort of look down on and, you know, oh, that's shiny, that's lovely. It's just embarrassing, but somehow I find it in my heart. You know, some chap walks past me in a really nice suit and I catch a glimpse of the lining and think, ooh. I mean, it's the lining of a suit and I have Jesus. It's astonishing, isn't it? But it's certainly in mine, so you may feel as if you haven't seen these things in your heart. And you may have got rid of them, in which case, all the more glory to the Lord. But in terms of things that shimmer and that are lovely, I also find that some people are beautiful. Especially, I find that they are beautiful by virtue of their character. There are some people who perhaps the Lord has brought them through certain things, and when you're with them, there is a loveliness about them. Very possibly, actually, because Jesus has in some way met with them. I know of some people like this, and they're just lovely to be around. And if I can say this, to me, they are people that shimmer a little bit. And it may be that people say to you things like, oh, I find you so encouraging to be around. And you may feel as if others or yourself have this, or that it is something to be desired. Well, it is lovely, but turn away from that also. Don't be concerned that you're not like that. And if someone says to you, oh, I found that comment so encouraging. You're so calm. You're so kind. You're so shimmery. Turn it to think of the one who died for you outside the city gates. Who took all your sin. What is your shimmering in the light of that? Gold or glass cannot equal it. Glass is spoken of here as that which is transparent. It could be translated crystal, because crystal also is see-through, it's transparent. Things are transparent when they have no flaw. And there are some people who are just of such upright character. I don't know if the Lord will bring this through to us, but I would love for us not to think anything of our character. Even if you find a bit where you think, do you know what, actually, I really don't mind about gold, I'm not so fussed about these shimmering things, I don't know what Mike's talking about. Well, even if you're pure, that's nothing. It doesn't buy you anything of salvation. Nor can wisdom be exchanged for articles of fine gold. And the word fine there really means pure. This verse, I suppose all of it speaks of that which is pure without defect. But this reminds me of a verse in, I suppose maybe we should turn there. I find turning to different places in the Bible really helpful in terms of keeping me awake in a sermon. So do go to 1 Corinthians 13. 1 Corinthians 13. Verse And we'll go from take verse 3 actually. I hope you kept your finger in Job 28, we'll be back there in a moment. But in 1 Corinthians 13, if I give all my possessions to feed the poor, and if I surrender my body to be burned, but do not have love, it profits me nothing. Paul here is speaking of love as a more excellent thing. But I find it astonishing, really, that he says that of itself, giving all my possessions to feed the poor, and surrendering our body to be burned, even that I suppose all of us would think, my, that person's really got somewhere. It doesn't profit anything if you are not, if your heart doesn't love on the basis of you know that God first loved you. If that doesn't fill your heart, then no amount of sort of outward purification or even inward purification. I just feel as if it's possible in Christian circles to, and I know it because I know it in my own heart, it is possible to so pursue a purity of character, a sort of life free from any defects, so above reproach. And it's possible to do that and not overflow with love, because we haven't necessarily realised all that Jesus has done for us, the love in the heart of God. And so it doesn't flow forth from us, and Paul says it's worthless. It doesn't profit anything. And I would love the Lord, by his grace, to give a turning away from all that we might consider to be of value, even character in ourselves, and to return to our first love, that we might know some profit. Very briefly then, let's just consider a few other things that we might find attractive. In verse 18, we find coral mentioned. And coral is something that grows naturally. I find it interesting that it takes time to grow, and so it's something that you sort of delight in the more as time goes by. And there are some things, I mean, two things that I can think of that fit into this. One of them I didn't dig out of my own heart, if I'm honest, because it's gardening. And I'm a rubbish gardener, but when you work on something continually, a project at work, or a literal garden, I suppose, it can take on a weight that it shouldn't. So can, as we grow from being children to being in the prime of life, I imagine, my hair is thinning, so I'm probably on the other side of that now, but I imagine that being approaching the prime of life, it is possible to take such delight in physical form and to make all of it that one can. And that too can take to greater place in our minds and take us away from just a rejoicing in what Jesus has done for us. And then we have, well actually I'll mention this as well, what if the church grows? What if the Lord should add to us a great many people so that we have coral here, beautiful things have grown? I just feel as if I must say this, it doesn't recommend us to the Father at all when you weigh it with the person of Jesus. Oh, grace is a wonderful thing, but it's not Jesus. And then there's a mention in verse 18 of the acquisition of wisdom is above that of pearls. And the word pearl there actually is quite difficult to translate, so I'm not going to bother getting into the depths of it, but it does have the idea of something which is rounded. And I just find that interesting, really, because we love that as people. I mean, schools charge gajillions of pounds a year for a rounded education. And we love to see churches rounded. You know, they're such a lovely church. There's such a sort of a balance of this and that. They don't just preach this, but they preach that as well. They have it all. But a church that has it all, it's not of value compared to Jesus. And lastly, two last things then. Topaz in verse 19. Topaz is enduring. It's really rare, it's really hard to find. But it also, it just lasts. Once you've cut a jewel out of topaz, it's like diamond or sapphire in its hardness, and it is so enduring. And I just wonder, what do you think is enduring? I'm almost tempted to give a little pause and to let you ask, well, what do you think is enduring? What will last? Because I'll tell you that, I mean, it might be relationships. You might think the relationship will last. You might think that wealth will keep you and will last. You might think that a group of people that you're amongst will last. Can I encourage you to lay all these things in the dust? I actually feel it right just to skip ahead of myself a little bit, just so I can finish somewhat almost on time. In verse 20, Job's just run down a list of, look, these things just don't compare. And he says, where then does wisdom come from? And where is the place of understanding? It's hidden from the eyes of all living and concealed from the birds of the sky. I want to tell you that actually hearing a word like this won't give you wisdom. I can tell you that Jesus is above every other thing, but that won't be the same as you being persuaded by me. And I encourage you, if you feel as if this may not be the case in your life, I encourage you to tell the Lord that and just say, Jesus, you've got to be more real to me. I want to see Jesus. Because it's hidden. And only God can reveal it. So you can't work it up. It's Jesus. You can't do it yourself. Ask him. I ought to mention as well, because I don't really know who I'm talking to, there may be some people here who don't know Jesus at all. And we read in verse 21, Abaddon, which means destruction. It is hell, and it is the place of destruction. Abaddon and death say, with our ears we have heard a report of wisdom. That is to say, they do not have first-hand knowledge of Jesus. That is, in a sense, the definition of those who are not in heaven, who are in hell. It is those who do not know Jesus. And that is why Jesus is so precious, because he is the only escape from the anger of God against sin. And that's why it says, it's such a pitiful state to be in, isn't it? That they say, we've heard a report of it. It's as if we've heard about it, but I don't know it. But then we read, God understands its way. He knows its place. Elsewhere, we read that Jesus says, I am the way. And we read of a place where Jesus gave his life. I just can't help but feel, if you'll allow me to suggest this, that when it says God understands its way, oh, would you let that speak of Jesus? And when it says God knows its place, would you let that speak of Calvary? Or can you think of a more significant place? Now, I'll just read again Philippians chapter 3. Philippians chapter 3. And verse 7. Whatever things were gain to me, Those things I have counted as loss for the sake of Christ. More than that, I count all things to be loss in view of the surpassing value of knowing Christ Jesus, my Lord, for whom I have suffered the loss of all things and count them but rubbish, so that I may gain Christ. I'm aware that sometimes when a word is brought, we have tea and coffee afterwards, and I sort of feel as if much can be lost in the quickly turning from things of God to a cup of tea or coffee. So can I suggest that we sing one last hymn in a moment? I just wanted to sing Stand Up for Jesus. And I'd like to ask you, if I may, we don't really do altar calls at this church, but if there's something that you'd like to speak to Jesus about, if you'd like to say, even if it's just, I don't really know what I need to let go of, I don't know what I prize, but I want to know Jesus more, then stand as you sing. And if there's something that you value and you think, Jesus, I want to value you more than this, then stand as you sing. Please don't stand if you don't really mean it. And let your standing be unto Jesus, who is worth knowing. So I've asked Simon if we can sing Stand Up for Jesus.